Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly, vigorous, relentless, and oftentimes ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting live from the very Well Armed studio in Niverville, Wisconsin. My pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state and the most informed gun owners out of the state. You are your community's finest with a face for radio and a voice for silent movies. My name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well Armed Radio. Just a free man trying to stay afloat in the sea of communism here. And start the show with the usual warning, no sacred cows here. Interact with the show in a couple different ways. You can, if you're listening live, you can interact with the chat function on Blog Talk Radio. You can also utilize the, you can type or you can comment in the Well Armed Radio, on the Well Armed Radio MeWe page, MeWe.com/P/WellArmedRadio. And then also, I throw this out there, since I've been banned from Fascist Book for life, which has been more like before I do that, let me give you the phone number for the show. Phone number for show 563-999-3787. 563-999-3787. Being banned from Fascist Book for Life, which has affected me more than I thought it would. I've been banned from Fascist Book for almost a year now. It was probably 2 years ago. I decided I needed to reduce my digital footprint. So I wasn't posting much on my personal Facebook page. Anything that had to do with Wisconsin Carry, I would post in the Wisconsin Carry Facebook group. Anything, maybe occasionally throw up a picture of the dog or something hiking or a picture from boating on my personal Facebook page, but really not much on my personal Facebook page, and zero political. I don't think I put anything political on my personal Facebook page. Speaking of people and comments, Tim is on the Well Armed Radio MeWe page, and he saw my teaser for the show where I talk about why Republicans aren't happy winning, and he put the question, Republicans actually win? That's a good rhetorical question there, Tim. I've ended up finding that I miss book more than I thought that I would. When I first got banned, my first thought was, well, awesome, I'll have a whole bunch more free time now. And that's actually come true. I used to be on Facebook, here and there throughout the day, running my own business and running my own company, and I might get a few seconds, I'm on hold or, trying to multitask. I click into Facebook and see what's up. And when I'm at the gym in between sets, grab your phone, see what's going on Facebook. So I used it more to keep up on, what kind of stuff was goings on, as much as if anything more than, for posting on my personal page. But since I've gotten kicked out, it was an easy, convenient way for people to find me. Whether it was an issue with Wisconsin Carry, because I would get random Facebook messages from, people that I didn't necessarily know, but that had some inquiry for Wisconsin Carry or something. And it's bothered me more than I thought that it would to be banned from Facebook for life. I was really hoping that, Trump was going to come out with his own social media platform, and that might be a challenge to Facebook's dominance, and that it might get some, critical mass of people there. But that really hasn't happened. MeWe is just MeWe. Where I was going with this one was that I do have a Instagram account. So that's one way. I think amongst our generation, I'm Generation X, but definitely the baby boomers, Gen X, Facebook, I think, is much more prolific than Instagram. I think for the, I don't know what my fiancé's kids, I call my kids. I don't know what they're, I think maybe they're Generation Z. They're not millennials. I think maybe Generation Z. And Instagram is definitely their primary social media platform that they use. But for our generation, again, I think Facebook is definitely the dominant one, certainly the dominant one. But I do have it since I'm banned from Facebook. I didn't have an Instagram page when I got banned from Facebook. I know other people that got banned from Facebook, and Facebook owns Instagram. Part of the reason why I think Facebook needs to see antitrust action, because when Instagram became the largest growing or fastest growing social media platform, Facebook do? Facebook went and snapped them up, bought them up. I think same thing like when WhatsApp became the most prolific messaging platform. Facebook went and bought them up. That's classic monopolistic behavior. One of the reasons that I think Facebook needs to face antitrust action repercussions, regulation as the monopoly that I think they've turned into. But because I wasn't on Instagram at the time, I don't know if that's the reason, because I know other people that got banned from Facebook, they got banned from Instagram as well, but I didn't have an Instagram page. So I don't know if I've slipped under the radar, but I opened an Instagram page. So if you'd like to, feel free to follow me on Instagram. I think NickClark74 is my username there. So again, just looking for a way to connect with people, connect with Wisconsin Carry members that I used to have a pretty good communication channel through with the Wisconsin Carry Facebook group, and which I don't anymore. So, but yeah, like I said, I'm surprised. My feelings about Facebook, my beliefs about Facebook and how nefarious / degenerative it is hasn't changed, but I do, it is and remains the dominant. I mean, it's the place to be. It's the place to connect. It's the place. So not being on there has definitely been difficult. Makes me feel isolated. So like I said, Instagram, if you use it, feel free to follow me there, NickClark74 on Instagram. But otherwise, again, here we are in fall, my absolute favorite time of the year. Took the boat out, took the yacht out on Saturday. Awesome day. Really, I thought long and hard. The Ryder Cup was this weekend. I love the Ryder Cup. It takes kind of the things that I like, which is golf, and then adds in the, competitive team aspect of it, which makes it pretty cool, raucous crowd. So that's going up in Whistling Straits, which is about, I don't know, 50, 60 miles from New Berlin. If you go up the coast of Lake Michigan, Whistling Straits is right on Lake Michigan. If you go up the coast of Lake Michigan, it's 58 miles by water. And I thought really hard about going up there on Saturday. I looked at the wind forecast, the wave forecast, and it looked like it was breezy on Saturday, but the breeze was coming offshore. So I thought, it wouldn't be too bad of a ride to get up there. But, Sheboygan's a little bit of a haul. I mean, Racine's super easy. Racine's like 20 miles. Port Washington is, 20, 22, something like that. Super easy, breezy. Sheboygan's like 50 miles, 52 miles. But Whistling Straits is just north of Sheboygan. So you got another few miles. So 58 miles, I think, by water. And I couldn't remember. It seemed like when I had seen other things there, like the PGA Championship or some other majors that were there at Whistling Straits in the past, that there were boats in the water. So I, if I'd have thought of it earlier, maybe I did think. I can't remember if I thought of it or not. My last couple of weeks, this summer has been so busy, so stressful. I mean, at times, have you ever heard the song by Alabama? It's I'm in a hurry to get things done, rush and rush until life's no fun. All I got to do is live and die, but I'm in a hurry and I don't know why. Like, I heard that song on the way to the gym on Saturday morning. I'm like, geez, like that's like been my life this summer. I'm in a hurry to get things done. I rush and rush until life's no fun. That was my summer. I was rushing to my fun things. So like my fun thing is to go golfing, but I was rushing to get there. And then once I would get to golf, then sometimes I had to rush to get done because I'd get there late in the day and trying to finish up my, then I get up in the morning and I go to, so I just, Saturday mornings, I rush to the gym, and then I rush home from the gym so I can rush to the boat. And once I get in the boat, then, it's a little bit of relaxing time. But then when we get off the boat, then it's rushing to get the boat put away. And it just felt like that's how the whole summer went. It was just rush, rush, rush. And it was total first world problems. The thing could be worse. My health is good. Business is good. So, I complain with the awareness that it's first world problems, but I got to tell you, it's just been rush, rush, rush. So this week, I thought about going up to Whistling Straits with the boat, and I don't remember when that thought crossed my mind, if it was Thursday or Friday, but I threw it out there to Kim and my fiance, and then she's like, yeah, we can stay at Sheboygan. We really like Sheboygan's marina. But I wasn't totally sure how well you could see things from the water. I wasn't totally sure how the waves would be. I wasn't totally sure if we'd get TV service up there, because when you're on the boat, there's only a few holes of Whistling Straits that you can see. But I thought you could watch it on TV. Well, that was my concern, is that I didn't know if we'd get TV service up there. So if we go up there, and then all you can see is, you anchor, and all you can do is anchor by the seventh hole, Sorry, I'm making myself a note here. All you can do is see the seventh hole. You really can't get the full experience. So I thought about it going up there, but just because of those reasons. And I figured if we couldn't get TV service up there, because I think when we stayed in Sheboygan, we couldn't get pick up Milwaukee TV stations. And then Whistling Straits being a little bit farther north of Sheboygan, and then being right on the coast, there's bluffs there, and I thought that we'd be blocked by the bluffs so that we couldn't, you know, there was a terrestrial barrier. So I just didn't know if it'd be the place to go. I didn't know if we'd, so we ended up staying. And then the other thing is, again, this summer I've maybe tried to do too much, go too many places. And again, rush, and then life's no fun. So we did stay around here, in Milwaukee. There was Louis' Last Regatta was going on, a big sailboat race that takes place out in front of the city on Lake Michigan. And so sometimes that's cool to see. So we drove out there for a little bit, checked out some of the boats. It was just finishing up when we got out there. And then they used to go in by the Milwaukee Ale House on the river, take all the sailboats up the river, and then there would be like, you know, 20, 30 sailboats all by the ale house partying. Some of them throw up their spinnaker. That's your big colorful sail that goes in the front of a boat, front of a sailboat. It's a cool sight to see. But I guess this year the post party is at South Shore Yacht Club. So we went down there to check that out, but they weren't, again, by the time we were down there, they were maybe just starting to assemble. And it wasn't like, you know, there's three sailboats that had pulled in or something. Anyway, I don't know if they had good participation this year or not, but it wasn't quite the spectacle that I was expecting to see. But that was one of the reasons we stayed in the area. I thought, I'll just make it an easy Saturday, go down by South Shore Yacht Club and see the boats coming in from the Louis Last Regatta. And then we cruised up to Lakeshore State Park and docked there. And just chilled. It was a nice chill day. It was a relaxing day. We didn't have to be any place, pick anybody up, entertain anybody, just my fiance and I. And we had a really good time. So yeah, that was the weekend. This is, again, my favorite time of year. Lower humidities, a little more comfortable temperatures. Hoping to see it'd be nice to get a freeze and get some of these mosquitoes out of here. But favorite time of year. Fall is my favorite time of year. Fall boating is my favorite boating of the year. And I think the only thing that I don't like about fall is that I know what comes after it. And that's winter. And winter in Wisconsin is just, winter in Wisconsin is really only 3 months. Everything else feels like cold spring, late fall, the cold doesn't really seem to bother me, but winter is usually like, you know, December still, first part of December still feels like fall, but then late December, that feels like winter. You start getting snow, December, January, February, but come end of February, sometimes you start feeling like spring is here. But gosh, if January, February aren't the longest months of the year here in Wisconsin, and then you're ready for spring, and then March comes, and March can be just completely bipolar. I mean, we've had 80 degree days in March, and we've had snowstorms in March, and I'm pretty sure we've had below zero in March. I'm not positive on that, but I'm pretty sure we've had below zero in March. But yeah, March is just so March is kind of like, that's the part that really, really drags, is because if winter was January, February, get your snow, do your snow activities. And then, you know, March, if you look at the average time, the average temperature for Wisconsin year round, it's pretty comfortable. It's pretty nice. So there's a lot of the year that, you know, spring and fall, that's 60 degree average. That's a fine day. What you realize here in Wisconsin is those averages are just that. It's not a mode average. It's a mean average, averaging out the temperatures. What ends up happening, it's not like it's always, around 60 degrees in March or late March. It's like 65, 70 degrees one day and 40, 30 the next day. And that's average out the 30s and the 70s, and you get to the average temperature for that day. But it seems like it's never that average temperature. It seems like it's always the extremes, hotter than that or colder. So March just drags on. April, you start to get a little bit of feeling like the summer's coming, and So anyway, winter really isn't that long. We joke here in Wisconsin that we have, you know, 3 months of nice weather, June, July, August, but and that's true, but we can get decent weather for, I mean, March, April, May, and September, October, November. Those can be decent months. It just always spilled in there. They're not consistently decent. Always spilled in there is some nasty ass weather that, I mean, you know, 50 degree days in May, that's a common occurrence here in Wisconsin. And that's what makes winter just really drag on. Cause in the summer, you don't get that. I mean, it's really rare. In the summer, you don't get a 60 degree overcast blustery day. You know, you might get a 60 degree humid day, you know, upper 60s, low 70s, humid as heck, you know it. But yeah, so anyway, here we are in fall. Love this time of year, my favorite time of year. Now my friend my friend Phil from Alabama is gonna right now send me, when he listens to the podcast, send me pictures of, you know, some 80 degree sunshiny weather that he's got down there in Alabama. And it doesn't bother me, Phil, not right now. They're not this. Now in January, when we've got below zero, and then you send me, you know, pictures, and your temperatures in the 70s, then I'll be a little jealous. Although, you know, I don't mind the winter weather, the 20 degree high days, you know, snow on the ground. I'm fine with that. Below zero shit. Nah, I could do without that. That's the days where my friends in the southern part of the country, where your friendly teasing about the weather hits home. Anyway, so what do we got this week? You know, the first topic I had, I didn't have any gun topics this week, but things I was going to talk about this week, again, I mentioned this in last week's show. If I don't feel like I have something different to share, then I... you know, I just don't feel like talking about the same thing, parroting out the same things about the current events of the day that other people, other pundits, you know, the mainstream media, even conservative talk radio. I just don't feel like parroting out the same things that they did. But I had a thought this week, so I have two topics I was going to do this week. And the first was why some Republicans just aren't happy winning. And here's what I mean by that. I get why the establishment Republicans hate Trump. You know, your Paul Ryans, your George W. Bush. Speaking of George W. Bush, I mean, is there a president for you? I'm just saying for me, but a president for you that has gone from more hero to zero? George Bush and Scott Walker are a lot similar to me in that I used to really respect them, and now I really can't stand either of them. George Bush, I mean, I was in my 20s, let's see, 2000, the year 2000, I would have been, oh shit, now I gotta do that, 26, maybe, born in 74, 26. So I was in my late 20s when George W. Bush was elected. Big Bush fan. At the time, I was in my country kick. There was a nice country bar in Milwaukee here that I used to go to, Bronco Billy's, and learned how to two-step and hang out with some ladies. And it was a cool place. You know, that was my cowboy boot days. And so George W. Bush, being from Texas, you know, I just liked everything about it. I remember I had a Bush t-shirt from his inauguration kind of licensing deal. I don't know how that works, if that goes to their fundraising or whatever, but it was like George, it was the presidential seal with a cowboy hat on it. And I think maybe it said Bush 2000 or something like that. But so I was just a really big Bush fan. And then September 11th happens and George W. Bush's popularity just skyrockets. And then, you know, the Patriot Act started coming around and I was disappointed in that. And then I want to say that 2004 was the first time I voted Libertarian. I can't remember if there was things other than, oh, I went to see George W. Bush. George W. Bush came here, and this had to be, this must have been pre-September 11th, because George Bush came to Wisconsin. Maybe it was June-ish, May or June of 2020, before, because I can't imagine it would have happened. It had to be before September 11th. So George W. Bush was elected in 2000, but got inaugurated January 2001, I should say. So he'd only been president for 9 months when September 11th happened. So this had to be, I'm thinking May or June, when he came to Wisconsin to go to Rufus King High School to give a speech. And somehow I got tickets to it, went to see him speak, took a friend of mine. It was super cool to see him in person. Just, it was electric in that room. It was a cool experience when they, you know, there was always Secret Service running around. It just, the windows in this gymnasium were blacked out so that snipers couldn't see in. And it was just cool. It was a cool experience. Then September 11th happens and George W. Bush becomes so popular and, you know, everybody starts buying flags and flying flags and patriotism is cool again. And, but then the Patriot Act and some other things that Bush was doing. And then I don't remember if there was other things that the reasons why Bush fell out of favor for me, but I still liked Bush, but I think I, you know, feeling young and, you know, passionate and principled, I think I remember voting Libertarian in 2004. That was the first time I voted Libertarian. Voted Libertarian, then joined Libertarian Party, voted Libertarian for a few years. I think for John McCain, I can't remember if I voted for John McCain. I think I was a Libertarian who often voted Republican because I never subscribe to a Libertarian thought process that you have to lose in order to win. That like somehow losing freedoms, losing this was somehow going to be the saving grace and leading to better things. I never subscribed to that. Which is ultimately the reason why I left the Libertarian Party, because they have a strategy to lose, a strategy to spoil, not a strategy to win. They could have a strategy to win. They could have a strategy to be impactful. Libertarians could be a large enough voting block that they could choose to selectively throw their support behind a pro-freedom Republican to get them elected, be the difference maker in some elections for Republicans. If you had a pro-freedom Republican, be active in primaries, get some freedom-minded Republican. But libertarians are worse than anybody else when it comes to party over principle. And I'll say principle first, but it's, trust me, libertarians are worse than anybody else when it comes to party over, you know, they won't support freedom if they find it in the Republican Party. Nope, got to have the L behind your name. I mean, Ron Paul, maybe being the exception that some of them crossed over and voted Republican. But libertarians really just, you know, I think libertarians are, they're people that just love to be able to have that self-satisfaction. You know, don't blame me, I voted libertarian. You know, just not willing to dig in and do the hard work of voting in Republican primaries, getting active and trying to push for freedom within the Republican Party. It's just easier to throw your hands in the air, vote Libertarian, and say, oh, don't blame me, I voted Libertarian, and then thumb your nose at everybody else like you're smarter than them because they voted for the lesser of two evils and all the other garbage that goes along with it. The Libertardians, I call them Libertardians now. But anyway, nobody has fallen from grace further for me than George Bush. Because you've seen him recently, just the smack he was talking to. I mean, he was, you know, wasn't a Trump fan to begin with. And same thing with Scott Walker. Scott Walker, back in, you know, Act 10, super supportive. I mean, I have a bumper sticker, a little magnetic bumper sticker that said Scott Walker's my hero. I mean, just super, super supportive of what Scott Walker did at the beginning of his first term. And then, you know, he kicks constitutional carry and throws us under the bus. But I still turn the other cheek. But then as the years went on and we got bills to his desk, I shouldn't say we didn't get bills to his desk. We got bills introduced and into the assembly. And Scott Walker came in and chop blocked those. Then I couldn't turn the other cheek. I turned the other cheek when he chop blocked us on constitutional carry. Constitutional carry had the inside track, the Madison, what was that Madison paper, the Capital Times or whatever, Madison paper that said, oh, constitutional carry's got the inside track in Madison. And then not Democrats, Scott Walker goes on TV and says, any bill that makes it to my desk must have mandatory training and a permit. If I have to have a license to drive my Harley, you should have to have a license to carry a loaded gun. And so, and again, I was mad at him about that, but I blew it off. But then when he started caving on everything else and going soft his second term, I mean, Scott Walker is just, am I as disgusted with Scott Walker as George W. Bush? I don't know. George W. Bush is pretty low on my totem pole right now. But yeah, two people who at the beginning of their term, man, couldn't have been a bigger supporter, but now just a term went from hero to zero for me, both of them. But so there's those establishment Republicans that hate Trump. You know, these establishment Republicans, they're Democrat light. They embrace big government. They actually want government control over things. They just want a slightly different priority for that control than Democrats do. You know, they want a different mechanism to dole out taxpayer money. I mean, Republicans, establishment Republicans, RINOs, you know, Republican, not so conservative, RBNCs, Republicans, but not conservatives. You know, they want to funnel all kinds of money through business. They want to take taxpayer money. They want to take, and they want to funnel money through business. In Wisconsin, they do it through the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Which is no corporation at all. The WEDC is not a corporation. It's a government bureaucracy that doles out taxpayer dollars in the forms of tax credits, typically through businesses. Then, of course, liberals, they want to funnel your tax money through entitlements. They want to give it to the two mechanisms that the Democrats want to funnel money through is through government agencies, government. They want to funnel it through public schools, through city, state, local governments. That's how liberals want to funnel private sector money into the public sector. Republicans want to funnel public sector money into the private sector through business, and liberals want to funnel private sector money into the government sector through more government programs, more entitlements, bigger government agencies, all that kind of stuff. So, but either way, they both, establishment Republicans and liberals, they want to funnel your money for their political purposes. But that's the establishment Republicans. That's the elected Republicans. And so when I, again, the kick of this segment is why some Republicans just aren't happy winning. So I get why establishment Republicans hate Trump. I get why senators hated Trump, because there was senators who went to Trump when Trump said, oh, that we're going to cut drug prices for generic drugs like insulin and stuff like that. We're going to cut those prices. There was Republicans that were in bed with big business that went to Trump and said, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Trump said, F yeah, I'm doing it anyway. So Trump couldn't be controlled by the big government Republicans, and Trump certainly couldn't be controlled by the liberals. And so that's why the establishment Republicans hated Trump. Because establishment Republicans, they love the swamp. They just love the swamp when it's under their control. Liberals love, and though it never really is. The swamp, the bureaucracy is always liberal to the core. So when Republicans get in positions of power, they can force compliance because it's government, and they can force monies to flow through the places that they want it to flow through. But they don't have necessarily the same priorities, the same mechanisms that liberals do, but they still embrace the heavy hand of government. So I get why both those entities hate Trump. But again, that's the establishment Republicans, the elected Republicans. But here's the other thing. I know some solidly conservative people who, not RINOs, not big government Republicans like Tommy Thompson, but I know some conservative people, just people I know, people around New Berlin, people. I know some solidly conservative people who embrace every bit of Trump's policies, every bit of his accomplishments, but they still long for someone else, someone other than Trump. I've talked about this in the show before, and it makes me shake my head. Like, you know, they just, this notion that, you know, Trump is callous and tweets too much, which I think is garbage. I don't think he does. I think that the reason some people think if we could have Trump's policies without Trump's personality, we'd have the perfect candidate. I posit that the reason that Trump was so popular with a segment of the population that maybe was apathetic to voting, maybe didn't think that it even mattered voting anymore, was because they thought that Trump was fighting for him, and his abrasiveness convinced them that he was fighting for them. The dislike of the establishment for Trump made him appeal to Joe Sixpack out in Juneau, Wisconsin, out in Lake Mills, Wisconsin, out in, you know, I'm trying to think of some other places outstate where Trump was just really popular. So for years, people thought that winning as a Republican was capturing the swing voters, the dumbass swing voters. And then Trump proved that, no, if you want to win, you got to go. You don't have to capture the swing voters. You want to capture the apathetic voters. You want to capture the disconnected people who gave up on politics and were just out there living their life like a blue collar, freedom loving American, wherever they were, whether they lived in the country, lived on a farm, lived on whatever, you know, wherever they were, those apathetic people who gave up on voting, gave up on politics. But so again, I know some solidly conservative people who embrace every bit of Trump's policies, every bit of his accomplishments, but they still long for someone else other than Trump. Winning wasn't good enough for them. All the winning that we saw under Trump's administration wasn't good enough for them. And I think I figured it out. I have a theory. I think there are Republicans, and maybe even call them conservatives, who have a deep nagging desire to be liked. I think that there's a segment of Republicans that need the approval of their peers, their liberal peers. They need to feel from the liberal soccer moms at their school that they have, you know, that they have approval for them. They need to feel approval from the celebrity media lefty friends of theirs. Well, of course, I mean, not that they have celebrity friends, but they need to feel approval from the celebrity contingent of this country. They need to feel approval from the media contingent of this country, and they need to feel approval from their lefty friends. I think there's a segment of conservative-minded people that think there is someone out there who could win like Trump in a way that the media wouldn't make them feel like terrible people. They don't want to feel like deplorable. Some of us embrace the deplorable label. I do. I love the deplorable label. But there's some conservative Republicans that just, it's their personality type. They desperately desire that approval from the mainstream sources, from the widespread overarching cultural thought leaders of the country. And I think that's why they just aren't happy winning, because I think for some people, it's not enough that Trump was doing everything that they liked, fixing the economy, draining the swamp, all those things. Because they felt looked down upon for supporting Trump, they wanted to be able to support Trump with pride and gusto, but they just couldn't because the media makes Trump out to be such a bad person. So they had to keep their Trump support in the closet, so to speak. They every time they talk to someone, they weren't proud to say, yes, I'm a Trump supporter. I think there's a number of conservative people who, again, have this deep nagging desire to be liked, this deep nagging desire to feel accepted for their support of whatever politician. I don't know if I'd say they want to feel like popular, because that's not the right characterization, but they don't want to feel looked down upon. They don't want to have to make excuses for. They don't want to have to. They want to have. They think that there's a Republican out there that's going to be so noble and conservative that the media can't portray them, and then thus guilt by association puts you in the same category as that dastardly Trump, you know, who's so crude. And so, again, I don't think Trump is crude. I think he tells it like it is. I think that his crudeness, if you want to call it that, which I don't think is really crude, his bluntness is the reason that he wins. I think that there's some conservative Republicans who think that Trump would be more popular and win bigger and win easier if he wasn't abrasive, supposedly, like the media portrays him to be. But my thing is that anybody that to these people who I think there's some truly conservatives. They're not establishment Republicans. They're not rhinos. They're truly conservative people, truly believe in freedom, but they have a deep nagging desire to be liked, and they have the deep nagging desire for the approval of their peers. They, because of the media portrayal of Trump, because of the media false reality portrayal of Trump, they feel inferior. They feel embarrassed. They feel like they can't be outwardly, boldly supportive of Trump because wholeheartedly supportive of Trump because of this reputation that the media has conjured up for Trump. And for that reason, amongst their, amongst some of the soccer moms, amongst, your TV personalities, and amongst the, they think there's a Republican out there that's going to appeal to everybody the way that like Barack Obama was just loved and adored. And you could say that you supported Barack Obama and feel so accepted and validated for your, and you can't do that for Trump amongst the media. Amongst the popular people, they're never going to. And if it's not Trump, if it's DeSantis, if it's, DeSantis is, they're already trying to demonize DeSantis. They're already trying to turn DeSantis into, I talked about this before on the show. If they could turn Scott Walker into the Scott Walker, the son of a preacher, Eagle Scout, choir boy who never spoke an ill word about anybody, polished, on point, on message, 100% of the time, 100%. Did you hear that? I actually just 100% of the time. That was like a Scott Walker accent that just came to me as I was trying to characterize Scott Walker. If they can turn Scott Walker into a demon, they can turn anybody into a demon. And so these Republicans that think that there's a conservative out there who's going to have Trump's policies, but who they can be proud to say they support, it's not going to happen. If you think DeSantis is that guy, trust me, the minute DeSantis starts to, Trump is still, look, it's Trump's nomination in 2024. DeSantis, some people want DeSantis. Trump's still winning all the straw polls, but these people that say, I think Trump brings, he motivates the liberals and all the hate from the liberals. And it's Trump's nomination if he wants it. I think he wants it. I think he's going to run again. And for that reason, no one else has a shot. Back when Trump wasn't proven, he rolled over the Republican field in the primary like a steamroller. Now that Trump is proven, no one can beat him. If he wants it, it's his. So if you want someone other than Trump in 2024 and you're a Republican, sorry, I think you're shit out of luck. Get on the Trump train and enjoy the ride. But if you hypothetically thought that, DeSantis is going to be your golden boy, trust me, they're already trying to portray DeSantis as some evil, terrible person. And it would only be more so if DeSantis had a legitimate shot at being the front runner, but he doesn't. So for that reason, they will continue to demonize DeSantis. They will continue to portray him in a negative light and do everything they can to smear him. But it won't be to the degree that they otherwise would, because he's not going to be – because, again, they all know that Trump's the target here, not DeSantis. But yeah, it's just that's why I think some Republicans just aren't happy winning. They aren't happy with winning everything when Trump was president. They aren't happy with a booming economy and a booming stock market and, full employment and rising wages and increased domestic security, homeland security, all that stuff. They weren't happy with that because they couldn't feel like part of the in crowd. They felt like they couldn't be a Trump supporter in too many social situations and still be part of the in crowd. They felt because they were, you know, they had to be embarrassed about their support for Trump. They had to be apologetic. Here, Scott says, after Trump, then what? Back to the old politicians who've been so bad for America. So I think that, so first, Scott, that's a great question. I think this is why I'm Trump DeSantis. I don't think if there was no Trump, let's say Trump couldn't run again. I don't think, remember Trump's first term, he had all kinds of problems getting his cabinet straight, getting his advisors straight, stopping the leaks from the White House. It took Trump a while, and even while doing that, he still accomplished an incredible amount of things. But I think now Trump knows how D.C. works. Trump has a network of people that he can trust. He knows, remember Jeff Sessions, his first attorney general, who turned out to be a bust. All these things. I think Trump could hit the ground in D.C. running far, far, far faster than DeSantis would. And then also, I'm a Trump DeSantis. DeSantis is the future after Trump, but that gives us 12 years. It gives DeSantis the time to be Trump's understudy in Washington, D.C. Trump could win. Trump will win. If we get free and fair elections in 2024, Trump will win, period. There's nothing they can throw at him. There's no skeletons in the closet. There's no, I don't care if they come up with something from his tax returns or whatever. There's nothing they can throw at Trump. If we have free and fair elections in 2024, Trump will win. And then we've got Trump DeSantis. If it's Trump, and I would love it to see DeSantis as his running mate, because then though Trump would be a lame duck president because he can't run again, DeSantis would be right ready to, having been Trump's understudy, building an administration, the Trump's second administration, knowing the people that they can trust. And then DeSantis would have the inside track for 2028 and then 2032. And we could have 12 years of swamp draining, and man, the things we could do. Because DeSantis is impressive. DeSantis really does impress me. But I just think at the DC level, at the federal level, he would need to be Trump's understudy to be able to hit the ground running. I think if, and again, it's a hypothetical because Trump is going to get the nomination and going to win if we have a free and fair election. DeSantis, it's not like there's a legit shot for DeSantis to win the nomination. It just won't happen. But let's say if Trump gets hit by a car, let's say if Trump has a heart attack and dies, I think that certainly DeSantis would be the front runner, but he's going to struggle his first term. He's going to struggle to put a cabinet in place that could do the things that Trump could. He's going to struggle to, with the same way that Trump struggled in his first term, finding people he could trust, stopping the leaks, you know, so on and so forth. But yeah, so that's why I'm Trump DeSantis. And then who knows? I mean, then you've got 12 years of swamp busting. You've got 12 years of trust busting with big tech. You take on big tech in Trump's next term, and DeSantis has already done that in Florida, taking on big tech. Yeah, I agree with you, Scott. We got the America First movement cannot die, the America First movement has to live on beyond Trump, and I think it will. But I think we need Trump to get back in the White House to do the big tech busting that needs to be done, because big tech, we have to address big tech, and I think Trump is the person to do it. And then if we can do that, then we have blazed a trail. Because right now, I think there's people that would want to get in, but they see how it seems insurmountable to defeat. I really do think we're on the precipice of tyranny, the precipice of totalitarianism. If we can't get Trump back in office with free and fair elections, because he will win with a free and fair election, then the power of big tech, the power of the left is just too strong. But Trump is our shot. This is our shot. 2024 is our shot to get him in, to get free and fair elections, to prevent the election fraud that was stole the last election, and then do some swamp draining on a massive scale to disassemble the liberal machine that has been built, to disassemble what big tech has been able to do, so that there is room for outsiders to run in the future? Because right now I think outsiders wouldn't dare run because they think they're going to get smothered, think they're going to get destroyed by the liberal establishment. And I don't blame them for thinking that. But if Trump can get back in there, do some swamp draining, big tech busting, I think then other people will, freedom-minded folks from the outside, whether it's business leaders or something, freedom-minded people will be willing to step up and take those reins. Next thing I was going to talk about tonight was this Gabby Petito, Brian Laundrie fiasco. I mean, I'm sure you've heard about it on the news. You'd have to be living under a rock to not. But so I watched the hour-long police body cam video of their encounter with the police in Moab, Utah. I don't have an hour to sit and watch a video, but fortunately, it's all, you know, there's nothing to watch as much, a little bit to watch, but it's more listening. You know, you hear it. So I could play it in the background while I was doing other things throughout my workday. So I watched the whole, what is hour and 14 minutes long. Watch / listen to the whole encounter. And having watched that hour-long police body cam, here was my first impressions from it. And my first one is that Gabby is really emotionally unstable. And I'm being nice. She just comes off as really emotionally unstable. Brian Laundrie in the police cam now, and I understand sociopaths can come off, you know, whatever, but Brian Laundrie comes off as a genuinely nice guy. Seems a little odd, seems a little, you know, geeky, but he does come off as a genuinely nice guy. Now, what else is odd is that, so Gabby's on her phone with the police during this encounter. Excuse me. Gabby's on the phone with her mom during the police investigation that was occurring during this traffic stop in Moab, Utah, which is the first encounter the police had with them. So she's still attached at the hip to her family. That's what just kind of strikes me about these, whatever generation you want to call them, these, what the hell is she? Was she 18 or 19 or no, 22, I think. They're young. But they're so independent. They're going to go gallivanting around the Western United States in a minivan, but yet still on the phone with their mom multiple times a week. I mean, it's such a contradiction. These, again, whatever generation you want to call them, either young millennials or old generation Zs that they're so adventurous and quote independent, but yet they're still attached to their families. So dependently, but here they are, her and Brian, Gabby Petito, Brian Laundrie, driving around the country, living out of a van, blogging. This is the generation that should be the hungry up-and-comers. I mean, when I was the age of Gabby Petito, Brian Laundrie, you know, 22, 23, just graduated from college, I mean, I loved throwing a suit on every day and going to the office. I mean, I remember going back to the office after the gym at night to research clients, et cetera. I mean, I had that thirst to climb the corporate ladder and I was in sales, so I didn't necessarily need to climb the corporate ladder as much as I needed to build my customer base in business to business sales for the company I was in. But college age kids now, oh, let's take a gap year and go run around the country in a van, seeing all the natural parks and blog about it. And that's another thing of people at this age. Everybody now thinks that they could, you know, they can go open a YouTube channel, get millions of viewers, and fund your lifestyle with everybody watching you do your thing. I see this all the time, whether it's in the boating world, whether it's in the, I mean, there's pilots that do it. But all these people, they think they're going to, you know, these travel people that are 20 something and they're going to go travel around. There's people, you know, go different places in Michigan and Wisconsin in the Midwest, and they blog about, or they do these video blogs, YouTube channels about visiting Saugatuck, Michigan, and visiting Holland, Michigan, and visiting, you know, they just think that they're going to become this big influencer. I mean, that's the curse of the inner city, was all the young boys that were going to be NBA players. You know, they put all their effort into basketball, hoop dreams. I mean, that was the way to get out of the inner city. You know, basketball, become a professional athlete, hoop dreams. You remember that movie, Hoop Dreams? And then when all that didn't work out, well, at least you could be a drug dealer. I mean, that's what happened in the inner city. Well, now we have all these young adults, these college-age kids that think that they're going to get rich and famous being a YouTube influencer. And that can't be sustainable. I mean, that's the same like these hoop dreams for all the kids in the inner city that thought hoop dreams, you know, work hard, throw yourself into basketball and become a professional basketball player, and that's your way out of the inner city. The way out of the, you know, middle class doldrums for these young adults, college-age kids, is they think they can be a YouTube influencer, get millions of views, get paid to go around living a life of leisure. But they're just, it's not sustainable. Very few will make it. There's just not enough, you know, not enough demand out there to support a wide swath of the Generation Z being YouTubers and driving around the country and blogging about national parks. There's just only the couple, two, three cream of the crop is going to rise to the top, and then everybody else is just going to be nothing. Nobody's going to, there's not enough demand to watch 15 different YouTubers that are all traveling to the national parks all across the country. I mean, maybe two or three. It's probably even a more, you know, it's, you can't become an NBA player when there's only, I don't know how many, is there 32 teams in the NBA? Whatever there is, only 32 teams and 10 players per team. There's only 320 NBA roster spots. I don't know what there really is. I'm not a sports fan. 320 NBA roster spots in the country. Well, you know, maybe there's a couple thousand YouTube slots for big time YouTubers, and everybody else is just going to be a wannabe. But so anyway, back to this, that was what Gabby was trying to do, is she was blogging and she was creating a website. And you know, after watching the video, the thought came to my mind that I couldn't help but wonder if she might have hurt herself. I'm not saying I wouldn't bet money on this, but you know, I could just picture the possibilities. You know, she flips out at Brian, she either ran off or hurt herself. Maybe the encounter with the police in Moab, Utah scared the shit out of Brian Landry that he was going to take the blame if the police got called again, because he saw that in the last case that the cops thought that Gabby was to blame, because the cops kind of in that encounter in Moab, Utah, they seemed to take his side. They determined that Gabby was the primary aggressor, that she was the one that would need to be cited or taken to jail if they determined that it was a domestic altercation. If you watch the video, they end up kind of weaseling their way out of it and calling it just, it wasn't a domestic, it was just a mental health situation. They separated them for mental health reasons, so that they could avoid the mandatory requirements of, I'm going to lose my live audience here. I should have put in an hour and a half, but I only put in an hour, so I'm going to lose my live audience. I'm going to go a little bit overtime past the live broadcast. So I'll lose you guys in about 75 seconds here, 60 seconds. So thank you, Scott and Lon, for tuning in on the chat. But yeah, so I can just see the possibility, or I could see the possibility that, you know, maybe she ran off. Maybe they got in a fight and she ran off. Maybe he waited for her. Maybe he tried to call her. Maybe they did get an altercation. There's also a pattern in this country of women ditching their boyfriends after they get mad at them and then being preyed upon by others. There's a case out of Miami where this couple gets in an argument in the club, and then he gets kicked out, he leaves, and then she ends up leaving with some other dudes, and then she ends up burned to a crisp in a dumpster a week later. And so the boyfriend was a person of interest, but it was, you know, he was never charged with anything. And so I'm not one of these people that's immediately jumping, oh, Brian did it. I'm not saying he didn't, but I'm not one of those to just jump in. Like, but the media sensation on this Brian Laundrie case is just off the charts. And it's like, if you analyze situations, if you analyze media, if you analyze reporting, you can cut the bullshit and see how bad the media lies really are. You know, I use the saying a lot, if you don't watch the news, you're uninformed. If you do watch the news, you're misinformed. I'm going to use this as a perfect example. So there's a story, Fox News had a story about Brian Laundrie and Gabby Petito. After the encounter in Moab, Utah, where the police pulled them over and stopped to investigate and talk about their altercation that they were having, after that, then they ended up in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, at a restaurant called the, oh, what was the name of that restaurant? Mary Piglets. So this is a restaurant in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Gabby Petito is there with Brian Laundrie. And so this is a story that was on Fox News from foxnews.com from Michael Ruiz, published 4 days ago. So one of the last, I'm going to read some of this. One of the last times Gabby Petito was seen alive, and one of the last times Gabby Petito was seen alive involved an explosive argument. That's the word, explosive argument between Brian Laundrie and wait staff at a Jackson Hole restaurant, according to a New Orleans couple who said they witnessed the spat. So there's this couple that's from New Orleans that were vacationing in Jackson Hole, and they witnessed Brian Laundrie getting into a, you know, argument or something with the wait staff at this Jackson Hole restaurant, Mary Piglet's. Her name's Nina Angelo, and her boyfriend's name is Matthew England. So Angelo and England, that's this couple that were up there in Jackson Hole. They were in town for a wedding. They were out to lunch at Mary Piglet's, and they saw what they describe as an agitated Laundrie begin arguing with a waitress. And then 4.5 hours later, a travel blogging couple passed Petito's van at a campsite north of town. And then this person blogs about it. But so this Angelo contacts this Angelo, this woman, part of this couple that saw this argument at the restaurant. They contact the police, the FBI. And so once this is later, once they see on the news that Gabby Petito disappeared, and they're like, oh, that's the couple that we saw in the restaurant. And she says to her boyfriend, and they're like, yeah, that is the couple. And so then they contact the FBI to report the incident. And so the incident happened roughly 2 weeks after the incident in Moab, Utah. And again, this is a couple weeks, they're reporting this a couple weeks after it happened, a couple weeks after they saw Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie in this restaurant in Jackson Hole. So that's the story about this encounter in the restaurant. And the news reports call it an explosive encounter. And I saw that used in TV as well. This was on FoxNews.com, but I heard it on TV as well. Explosive encounter at a restaurant shortly before Gabby Petito disappeared. But then if you read the actual statement that the witness gave to the FBI, this Angelo, a photographer, she said she couldn't overhear the conversation, but she believed Laundrie was arguing with the staff over the bill or about money. And she described his body language as aggressive and said he left and returned about four times. So you read also in this story, from this, and it's right in this Fox News website, they ask the wait staff, and the wait staff at the restaurant said that they didn't recall the incident. So even though this couple that was vacationing in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, they recalled seeing Brian Laundrie get an argument with the wait staff, the wait staff didn't recall the argument between Brian Laundrie. So here's a quote from the article. A manager at the restaurant told Fox News that the business is super busy during summer and couldn't recall the incident. Local police and sheriff's departments deferred the questions to the FBI, who declined to comment. This Angelo, who posted a detailed account of the scene on her Instagram, said she didn't think much of the incident at first. And when they flew home to New Orleans, Hurricane Ida hit and upended their lives. And then Angelo said, it did not appear that Laundrie was on drugs and he was not screaming, but he was behaving aggressively with the restaurant staff, a waitress, a hostess, and the manager, all women. But the police were never called in this Jackson Hole incident. So here we have the news portraying this completely inaccurate, sensational version of events, poisoning the entire jury pool. The news media calls it an explosive encounter in a restaurant. That's how it's been reported in the news over and over and over again. But yet, this supposedly explosive encounter, Angelo, one of the witnesses, admits that she couldn't hear the conversation. Well, how explosive is the conversation? This Mary Piglet's can't be that big of a restaurant. It's Jackson Hole, Wyoming, for Pete's sake. So this argument that was so explosive that she couldn't even hear it. But so again, this is where you look at what the media says and look what the actual facts are. Because some people see the headline and say, oh, yeah, did you hear? Yeah, they got in a big argument at that restaurant. Bullshit. This explosive argument that's being called explosive, the witness couldn't even hear the conversation. So she only saw it. She couldn't hear it. She couldn't overhear the conversation. How explosive, how aggressive could Brian have been talking to the wait staff if others couldn't? Look, I've been in restaurants and there was intense arguments, confrontations. I've been in restaurants where there was confrontations between the wait staff and a patron, and I could hear it because it was loud. That's what explosive confrontations are. They're loud. But here, this explosive, repeatedly characterized, explosive encounter, she couldn't even overhear the conversation. And the wait staff didn't even remember this. So how explosive was it that the wait staff, you know what this tells me? The wait staff couldn't recall the incident. It means it was no big deal to the wait staff. The police weren't called. So the wait staff wasn't like concerned for their safety. So essentially this girl saw Brian Laundry in a restaurant taking issue with his bill with the wait staff in probably a semi-calm manner. Because if he wasn't semi-calm, the police may have been called. The manager or the wait staff would have remembered the incident. She could have overheard what was said. So it had to be semi-calm. So what's being characterized as explosive argument was not explosive. In fact, it was probably almost the opposite. An accurate representation probably said that Brian Laundry had a mild disagreement with the wait staff at a restaurant in Jackson Hole, had a muted disagreement with the wait staff at a restaurant in Jackson Hole. I mean, that's probably the accurate way to characterize this thing. So, you know, when people read this stuff and see this stuff in the news and you go by headlines, you go by what's, because, you know, you don't dive into it and analyze it like I have. But it's really easy to paint this picture of unquestionable guilt, like Mark Belling, like, yeah, everybody knows the guy's guilty. But look, I don't trust the media, and the media is clearly sensationalizing this. Oh, and now the latest, an arrest warrant has been issued for Brian Laundry. The arrest warrant that's been issued for Brian Laundry, the boyfriend, is not because they have probable cause that he murdered her. They're only issuing the arrest warrant because he used her debit card after she supposedly was dead. But here's the, so then that, some people hear that and they say, oh yeah, see, he killed her and then he's using her debit card. Well, but wait a minute. They were traveling the country together. In the body cam video of the encounter in Moab when the police stopped them, Gabby Petito says that they share money. So Brian Laundrie's probably been using her debit card all the time on their trip, their little adventure in the Western United States. If they got separated and he was using her debit card, which again, in the police body cam video, Gabby says that they shared money, they pooled their money. This isn't necessarily a smoking gun of guilt either. If she and him got in an argument, which clearly happened a lot, and he couldn't find her, maybe she got mad and stomped off. I mean, I could see him taking off for home, figuring she'd contact him somehow. Maybe he figured she ran off with another dude. I mean, when I say ran off with another dude, I mean, like, they clearly had a tumultuous relationship. But if she gets mad, you know how young couples are. She gets mad. Again, it's happened at bars. A couple gets in a fight at a bar. The guy gets kicked out, and the girl, then a bunch of guys, you know, start chatting up the girl, and she leaves with one of them, and she's, and you know the mentality, oh yeah, I don't need him, huh? See, look how quick I could find another guy, you know. It's a possibility that she and him got in an argument, and she, you know, is, these aren't necessarily desolate wilderness areas. They're national parks, and if you haven't heard, national parks are getting like swamped with people right now. So there could be other hikers around, other vacationers. There could be, you know, dudes on a bachelorette hiking trip. I say that because I know of one recently, some guys that went on a bachelor hiking trip for the bachelor party. But all these things that the media is trying to portray to just have this, to me, it's not necessarily the smoking gun of guilt. If she and him got in an argument, which clearly happens a lot, and he couldn't find her, I could see him taking off her home, figuring she's going to contact him somehow. I could see him using her debit card because he's been doing that the whole time. He has no money. They're sharing their money. He needs to put gas in the van. Now, again, I'm not saying he's innocent. I wouldn't bet a penny he's innocent. But I am positive that the media is wildly sensationalizing, and that's no surprise. I mean, I'm not. But the media just is wildly sensationalizing this case. But and then the latest is this pathetic media racism angle. Like now that the media is making this sensational story about Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie, and then the next breath, the talking heads in the media, ABC, NBC, whatever, CBS, they don't make a big deal about missing black girls, which is such bullshit. Because here in Milwaukee, like this, there's Alexis Patterson was a young black girl that disappeared on the way to school. I forget the name of the school, but I think it was maybe in Sherman Park. This is, gosh, maybe 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago. But this young girl, Alexis Patterson, left for school. Last time anybody saw her, she was going to the bus stop and she disappeared and hasn't been seen since. But second, I mean, this whole bullshit trying to make a racist angle out of everything. This claim that, oh, there's nobody makes a big deal about missing black girls. Many missing black girls, they just vanish. I mean, it's likely perhaps that they were taken into human trafficking, but there's nothing to sensationalize. It's true that we have a lot of missing black girls from the inner city, but what don't we have here with the Brian Laundrie, Gabby Petito case? We have video from the police encounter in Moab, the body cam video. We have a tale of two lovers. We have eyewitness observations, eyewitness encounters with them, salacious details about arguments and fights. And when a girl, like let's say a girl from the inner city of Milwaukee disappears, she's taken into human trafficking. There's no video. There's no witness reports to sensationalize. There's nothing to make a big fuss over. There's no drama, no lovers quarrel. It's just a face on a milk carton. Is it sad? Yes. Is it tragic? Yes. There's nothing to sensationalize. So this claim from the media that, you know, that we don't care about when a black girl disappears. Well, I mean, if a black couple was vacationing out in the Western United States, driving around, and they were in the exact same encounter where there's body camera video from the police talking to the woman. And I think it would be sensationalized just like this one was. But yes, there's this pathetic media, just that everything's racist. But here's a second observation. The media is the one that blew this story up. The media is the one that's sensationalizing the hell out of this Gabby Petito story. The media glommed onto a story about a cute white girl. The media controls the narrative in this country. Look, the media didn't want the Hunter Biden story out there, sensational as that would have been. So gone, dead, suffocated, censored. It's the media that created this big deal around Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie, and then the media claims it's racist because people are so interested in a white girl missing. The media is the one that blew it up. The media is the one that sensationalized this. The media is the one calling a little argument so inconsequential in a restaurant that the staff didn't even recall it, that the police weren't called, that the witnesses couldn't even overhear the conversation, an explosive argument. The media is the one that has driven this sensationalism about this case. If the media hadn't picked up on it, the rest of us wouldn't have, when I say rest of us, I'm speaking collectively, wouldn't have glommed onto it. Oh, but now we're a racist country because we only care about missing white girls. The media sensationalizes the story, blows it up so that everybody starts following it. And then after everybody starts following it, blames us all for being racist because we don't make a big deal about missing black girls. You know what this reminds me of? I got a good analogy here. A girl in high school that grinds on, you know, guys, you know where I'm going with this. Or you've maybe been there. You're in high school and there's a girl. You're on a date with her, whatever. You're dating her. She's grinding on your dick, gives you a hard-on, gets you all worked up, kissing you, whatever, gets you all worked up. And then after you sprout a Woody in your pants, then the next day she goes to school and tells everybody that you're a hornball. It's like you can't dick tease someone and then turn around and blame them for getting aroused. You can't dick tease someone and then call them a hornball because they got aroused. You dick teased them. Well, the media dick teases us with this whole story and then turns around and calls us perverts. And I'm trying to make a parallel accusation. The media dick teases us with this story and then calls us nefarious perverts for only caring about, actually they call us racist, but the media dick teases us with this salacious story about a cute white girl and then calls us racist because we cared about the story that they dick teased us with. I mean, oh, the media, you got to love them. Anyway, that's the show for tonight, for this week. Hope you guys had a great weekend. Hope you're enjoying fall as much as I am. And we will maybe do it again next week. We'll see what pops up in the news and what we got to talk about. And homecoming next weekend for New Berlin West. So I'm a boat widow, or I'm a homecoming widow next weekend. Kim's going to be busy taking pictures all Saturday. So going out in the boat without her next Saturday with my other daughter, Kayla, and some of her friends perhaps. So, all right, you guys, enjoy the fall. Stay well armed. Stay free. Be well armed. Have a great week. And be careful. You know, hang on here. What I usually do is I hit my outro music. There we go. Now we got the outro music. I can't sign off before you have the outro music going. So now we got the outro music going. So now, while the outro music is going, now I can say to have a great week. Enjoy the fall. Enjoy the greatest weather of the year that we get here in Wisconsin. And stay free, carry on, and be well armed. You guys have a great week.
Chick Julie, you've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.